Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
It finally happened. The Calgary Flames finally dipped into the well and brought up some guys from the farm team. We all knew it was going to be sooner rather than later. And of course, I'm Dan alongside Matt to break it down with you. And we're joined this week by a friend of the show, longtime contributor, Kevin Olenek. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm really good. Good to be on. Good to see you, Dan. Good to see you, Matt. It's been an interesting week in Calgary. I feel like there was a parade at City Hall with balloons and celebration and joy all across the land. As a young Calgary kid got to play a dream game on Saturday.
And that kid is Matthew Phillips.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Why don't we we'll talk about that in just a second. Before we get there, I do want to give everyone some good news. For those that don't know, assistant general manager Chris Snow of the Calgary Flames was admitted to hospital Thursday. It sounded like he was in pretty bad shape. He was on a ventilator. He wasn't breathing by himself. Good news. It was reported today on Sunday that Chris is now off the ventilator. I guess he told his wife after he came off that he did it. And it sounds like he's kicked out once again. And Chris Snow will be an integral part of the organization for the rest of the year. So congrats to the Snow family. That's important. Chris has gone through a lot, and what an inspirational guy to have on this roster.
And just best wishes to the Snow family through the holiday season. And, you know, every time news about him, I think everybody in Flames Nation is worried about him and concerned about him and his well-being and his family's well-being. So I think we're all just relieved.
I think that's something about the Sea of Red, right? I mean, we love the players here. We love the front office staff here. Like, these fans are really attached to everyone that makes this team run.
Yeah. I think the hockey community too, as well. I think a lot of fans, a lot of people are just really pulling for Chris. It's a devastating disease. We did lose Boreas Salming to this disease two or three weeks ago, and a pretty emotional ceremony in Toronto also. So I think the knowledge of this disease is big. You know, Kelsey is so strong. I think it's just there's a lot of courage from both of them. And I think the hockey community, not only the Flames, which I agree with you, Flames community as a whole, but the hockey community as a whole has really stepped in and is pulling for this family. So.
Very true. The Flames continue their run of pedestal power. Kevin, that's what we've been calling it, as the Flames have been looking really good wearing these new pedestal jerseys. They got another win at home against the, I don't know if we can say dastardly, but I guess road weary at this point, Phoenix Coyotes with a 3-2 win. Matt, why don't we go to you first for some thoughts?
Well, this was a typical game against the Arizona Coyotes where it was painful to watch because it was extremely boring throughout most of the contest. And it seemed like both teams were just playing sloppy hockey throughout the contest. And Calgary got the win, and, you know, which is to be expected against Arizona, but it was not a pretty 2 points.
It's the Arizona Coyotes, and yeah, it wasn't a masterpiece. They got off to a slow start. It was fortunate that they were playing the Arizona Coyotes and they found a way to get themselves on the track there and get the win there. So I think fortunate, but an expected win. But I imagine, you know, I think every team is, when they're facing the Arizona Coyotes right now, are finding it really hard to play against a team that is not, there's not a lot of talent on there, and they do just bore you to death. So,
yeah.
And this is a team, if I remember, these guys have been playing like 14 on the road in a row or something.
They have played the least amount of home games in the National Hockey League. They played their fifth on Friday. So they've played 5 home games as they're getting that new arena all set up. And yeah, so there's going to be a lot more home games, but yeah, they're very road weary. That was a brutal schedule for Arizona for sure.
Though, you know, I mean, with that arena, the way it is, I don't know if anybody's going to miss not being at home. At least they're playing in actual NHL buildings.
True.
True.
Where's my rim shot sound effect?
Well, it's one of those things that it is a good place for young NHLers to try and get an opportunity to, you know, maybe cement themselves in the NHL. And we did see a couple of their young guys play rather well in the contest, but yeah, this is a team where it's going to take 4 or 5 or 6 years for them to dig their way out of being irrelevant.
Do you know one guy I do think deserves a little bit more credit is their goaltender, Carl Vilmanka.
Yeah, I agree.
He's a really good goalie. Like, if I was a team that needed to look at some goaltending at the trade deadline, that would be a guy I would be highly considered. I mean, look at the shot volume that he's already facing and behind this bad team. I don't know. I think that this is a guy that could steal a series for someone.
Yeah, he's very inconsistent. Sometimes, like, he is very bad, but you know, look at the team in front of him. It's hard, you know, like, if you're not being perfect, you're gonna get blown out. But I agree with you. Like, he looks like a good young and up and coming goaltender, which we'll see. I think if he got a better defense in front of him, that you're right, he could be a very good goaltender in this league.
Yep.
And then the next game the Flames played was also wearing their pedestal jersey, and again, a win with the pedestal. Maybe we're onto something here. Maybe we should just revert back to these 90s jerseys full time. The Calgary Flames get a 5-3 win over the Minnesota Wild. Why don't we start with you, Kevin, this time? What was your thoughts on this one?
Well, I think ultimately this game, even though it was a win, turned out to be a pretty significant game in terms of making some decisions within this organization. The fourth line of Lewis, Lucic, and Richie played about 5 to 6 minutes. Didn't get much work after the first period. They got off to a really it was 2-0 within the first 5 minutes. They got some power play opportunities, and Lindholm got 3 assists, and they finally found a way to turn things around. But in terms of where the trajectory of this week ended up, this game, I think, will be looked back upon as a pretty significant one, where I think Daryl Sutter recognized that there was I'm moving a little bit ahead, but I'm just going to say that just in terms of this game, I think Daryl Sutter recognized where this team was at, and there needed to be a change.
Yeah, well, you could see it quite clearly that, like, the Flames were basically running three lines after the first 5 minutes of the game, and very spotty action for the fourth line after that. And I thought it was a very good, resilient effort by the Flames to, like, after they went down 2-0, to kind of shut the door on Minnesota for the rest of the game and eventually get their mojo back, especially in the early part of the second period. But no, that fourth line, like, even on our show last week, we were talking with Mike Gold about like how guys like Lucic and Lewis and Richie and Rooney have all kind of struggled to varying degrees this year. And, you know, like, it started to look like it was becoming more of a need to get different personnel out there. And this week, and especially in this game, those players are mostly not playing at an NHL level. And with the Calgary Wranglers being so dominant, it just makes sense to make some personnel changes.
Well, the personnel changes were made after this game. If you looked out, you could have seen across the sky, just like when they summoned Batman, the Wranglers logo, downtown Calgary, as help was called for. And after this game, some interesting lineup changes, not all at once, but essentially Matthew Phillips and Radim Zahorna were recalled from Stockton, and Kevin Rooney placed on waivers and then sent down to Stockton. All happened kind of Thursday, Friday, just in time for the Columbus game. And in this Columbus game, Radim Zahorna made his Flames debut. He was in the lineup, replacing Brett Ritchie in this one. And he centered a line with Milan Lucic and Trevor Lewis, playing 6 minutes, 34 seconds, and 10 shifts in a losing effort to Johnny Gaudreau and the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, I'll say this here. I think Columbus got embarrassed the night before, or the game before. They were not going to get embarrassed again. I don't think they played a great game, though.
No, this was, in my opinion, a lack of professionalism by the Calgary Flames this whole game.
How so?
They hung out with Johnny the night before, and a bunch of players.
You could even tell Daryl was unhappy with that in the
press conference. Yeah, it's like, yeah, your buddies are not on this team anymore. And, you know, like, there's absolutely zero excuse for that quality of effort. Like, it's fine to go to hang out with the guy for a bit, but not when it's impacting your ability to actually play hockey the next day. And, like, the team was garbage throughout the contest. Like, there's absolutely no reason they should have lost to Columbus. And play as badly as they did. And, like, I'm sure that, you know, and I'm sure that, like, if the Flames weren't in the lineup the next day, that Daryl probably would have bag skated them after that one.
Well, what was really unfortunate about that was you did get a good performance from Jacob Markstrom. Yes, he allowed the first shot on goal again, but he found his footing. He played really well. He quite frankly kept the Flames in the game, and they had no business being in, because you're right, Matt. There was a lack of professionalism. It was a lack of they, as Daryl Sutter used the words, they went to Columbus for a visit. And I, other than Johnny Gaudreau, I'm trying to think of a tourist attraction in Columbus that would be an excuse to have such a lackluster effort like that, but I guess it did. Maybe they went and hung out at Ohio State. I have no idea, but, you know, I think what's frustrating.
Well, if it was Dougie Hamilton, it probably would have been the Columbus Museum of Art.
Maybe. Yes, maybe it would have been the Columbia Museum of Art for sure. But yeah, like, a team getting on a roll like this, trying to get yourself better, and quite frankly, let's face it, where the Flames are going to play a battle for their playoff lives. You have to come out. That's a game you need to grab. That's a scheduled win that you need to grab 2 points. And depending on what happens during the end of the season, we may look at that game and go, that was a poor effort there.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, like, I can understand, like, certain teams being able to let their foot off the gas a bit. Like, there was, I remember reading a thing that Scotty Bowman mentioned about coaching the Canadians in the 70s, and they used to treat the LA trip as like just a vacation, and who cares if we're playing hockey? We're just there to, sunlight, yay, you know. And, you know, Calgary's not in the position where you can just take a game off and, like, who cares? You know, like, we're...
Yeah, you guys have both said it. I think with where the Flames are, every game has to be a battle. If they were in a different spot, maybe, but you can't afford for that effort and that, you know, visit right now.
No.
Yeah.
Well, and the last game of the week was back-to-back. Dan Vladar went back in net, as he was against Arizona and Minnesota, and the Calgary Flames were in Toronto to take on the Maple Leafs. This was the Matthew Phillips debut for this year. He's played one other game. He played kind of a meaningless game during the COVID season with nobody in the building, but he was able to play in this one, centering a line with Backlund and Rogicka. The Calgary Flames ended up losing 5-4 in overtime in this one. And Daryl Sutter, after the game, slammed the officiating, but said his team put in a good effort. Kevin, would you agree with that?
Did they put in a good effort? Mostly.
I think in this case, good is relative, probably
better than the night before. They got off to another horrible start. They took far too many penalties. That simple.
16.
Yeah. And there was only the one I absolutely didn't like was the Backlund one in the first period for cross-checking. I didn't like that one because that puck should have been frozen in the first place, in my opinion. Backlund was playing the puck. And the Huberdeau penalty in overtime, I agreed with the Huberdeau penalty, but I also thought that Sandin should have got a high sticking penalty as well, because both of their sticks got up on that one. So I didn't really like those two, but everything else, I didn't necessarily have a problem with the calls that Calgary was getting. Now, I do think that there was a cross-checking penalty early that I think it was Robert Munich put out on Twitter, that there was a missed call that Toronto got for a similar that was let go from Toronto on Toronto's side there. But still, ultimately, as my pal Tyler says on Shifts and Pucks, you can't put the referees in a position to make a decision. And the Flames put the referees in positions where they had to make decisions. So Yeah, I don't know if I fully agreed with Daryl on this, but I think that this was to cover. I think it was a masterful job at deflecting the conversation into something else.
Yeah, this is one of those where, like, the Calgary penalties, like them being called in the way they were. Yeah, like the Backlund one was kind of questionable. The overtime one, again, kind of, you know, on the fence with. But it was more that, like, I think Toronto deserved maybe another two penalties in the game. Like, when Coleman had the breakaway in the first period, that could have been called a hook. And, you know, like, it just plays like that where, you know, and anytime you're allowing that many penalties and you're just giving Toronto, it's just like when you give the Oilers too many power plays, you know, you're going to see McDavid score, you're going to see Matthews score, you're going to see Marner score. Like, you know, like it's, you know, last night it was Nylander going off on a 5-point night. It's one of those where you need to have mental discipline. And I think that the Flames, you know, like they could recognize that the refs were going to call them closely all night off of the early power plays. So that's where you need to have the mental responsibility, frankly, to, okay, well, if they're going to call everything that we do, don't do anything stupid. And, you know, like the last 6 minutes of regulation, they had to kill off two penalties and then one right off the hop in overtime. And it's like, you're just trying to give the game away at that point. Like, if you're not going to have any discipline, like, you know, it was a very poor effort on that part from them.
Well, the other one just that I was sort of thinking about is the Vladar trip. I've seen that not be called. And that's pretty, yeah. Like that one, that's the other one that I would be, but like, can I just ask a question here though? Was Sutter complaining about the officiating, or was Sutter trying to, because the words were basically, I've been here long enough since my days in Chicago to know what happens when we're in Toronto. It kind of felt like he was trying to say something else subtly here. Which I know that Leaf ends are and Leaf meet
Sutter and Subtle don't usually go together.
Yeah, that's true. Sutter is belatedly saying something here, and he's trying to stay out of trouble, I guess. But
he's not talking about the Toronto nightlife,
no.
Right?
I don't know how to address this, but Toronto is a national brand, and I do think there is times in some of these bigger cities, and you'd see it in other sports. I mean, it was often in Montreal at the Forum over the years. People found it was weird how calls kind of turned out. I don't know if I think in that specific game, I can't say that I don't agree with him, but sometimes it does feel, it feels like there are some strange calls that often go against visiting teams in some of those bigger markets. And I sort of can see what he is kind of saying. I don't fully agree, but, you know.
It's sort of like anytime a team goes and plays in Yankee Stadium, you know that the umpires are going to be calling the game differently.
Yeah.
And, it's slightly that, but it's just frustrating because I think, like, on the overall, like, Toronto probably deserved two more penalties than they got, and Calgary probably deserved on the whole one or two less than they got. And, like, it was a very even game, I thought, in terms of, like, overall discipline. But yet the game was called wildly different between the two teams, and I think that's more what he was getting at, is that, like, because it wasn't like Calgary was just, like, playing rock'em sock'em hockey and, you know, just being stupid out there. But, you know, you look at the penalty differential and you would assume it was that kind of a game. And there was a little bit weird.
A lot of the penalties for Calgary were not rock'em sock'em penalties. They were undisciplined penalties.
No, I guess the only other, I thought a better effort overall. This is where I think this was one of those games, though, where I don't think we've talked about this enough overall in Flamesland, and I don't think Flame fans want to hear this, but maybe Dan and I know we were on the same page on this. I don't know where you are, Matt, but I think the Flames miss Erik Gustafsson more than a lot of, or Erik Gudbranson, pardon me, Erik Gudbranson. I always get the name confused there. Erik Gudbranson more.
I don't think we knew Gustafsson long enough to miss him.
I think the Flames miss Erik Gudbranson a lot more than I think the Flames realize. And I'm not saying that they should have paid him what Columbus did, but that Tanev Zadorov penalty killing pair is not as effective as Tanev and Gudbranson were last year. I think Gudbranson is a much better penalty killer. He seemed to be able to get people away from the front of the net. He responded really well to Tanev, and when I was watching that game and just watching how the Leafs were moving that power run in the power play, that was one game that reminded me. I think that that's a different result if Erik Gudbranson's there. And the other side of that, just go back to that Columbus visit. Does that Columbus visit happen if Erik Gudbranson's in the room? Because the last year we have very, very rarely had a conversation about unprofessionalism with the Calgary Flames.
True.
But I think Calgary's in a very different scenario this year too. Last year, Calgary didn't lose a top guy that everybody
liked. That's true. That's true. No, I agree. But I think this is one of those that everybody within the analytics and everybody that loves the scorer, you know, and like kind of looks down and poo-poos on what Erik Gudbranson brought to the team. And he's not a perfect hockey player. There were a lot of flaws. We saw that against the Oilers for sure. But he did bring a lot that the Flames have not found a way to replace.
No, and I find that teams generally that are more successful tend to have just big guys on defense that can clear out the front of the net. And as you mentioned, like losing Gudbranson, that removed a good portion of muscle from the blue line. And, you know, like Stone and other guys have replaced the rest of the game rather effectively, but that just raw physicality is missing from the lineup.
Yeah.
You know, and even on the Gudbranson side, I don't disagree with you guys, but I think Calgary is just missing a defenseman. And I think, you know, if we look at the roster, and Matt and I have talked about this, Shillington was penciled in there. For whatever reason, he's not here. I think whether it's Gudbranson or somebody else, we're missing an NHL
player. Yeah.
Yep. And Michael Stone played.
So we're definitely feeling
that. And Michael Stone only played 5 minutes against Toronto. 5:33.
Yeah, and Stone, he started off good, but he's sliding backwards a bit. And I think this is one of those where, like, the Flames, if they're making the playoffs, definitely need to address just getting a serviceable guy for the third pairing. And, even if it's another guy like a Derek Forbort, like, that's fine.
You know, when we're saying Stone's going backwards, Matt, is he regressing or is he going back to his mean? To me, he's been asked to play more than he should be this year. To me, right now, when I look at him, he's looking like a number seven.
Yeah, he's a number seven at best. And he's a serviceable six, more seven. He's a fill-in guy, but you can't play him the amount that you play.
He's a six in a pinch. Mm-hmm. Well, with those four games out of the way, the Calgary Flames are still not where they want to be right now. Fifth in the Pacific Division at 30 points, 13, 11, and 4 is their record. Above them is Edmonton at 32 points, LA at 35, Seattle at 35, and Vegas at 41. So still some climbing to do there. But guys, let's talk about these call-ups. The Flames finally did it. We've been calling for these call-ups to happen for how long now, and they finally did it. It finally happened. We got where we needed to be. We got the guys in the roster. I'll start with you, Kevin, and I'll ask you both the same question. Do you think these are guys that are going to, in Zahorna and Phillips, they're going to stay on the Flames roster, or do they play here for less than 30 days and get sent back to the AHL?
Well, I actually was pretty impressed overall with Zahorna. I thought he brought a lot of muscle and skill, and he's made a couple plays. that I think at the very least he deserves a lengthier look there, that I'd like to see a little bit more from him. I thought in terms of Phillips, he got better as the game went on. I'd like to see more from him just in terms of what he can do and what he can bring. I think it's all going to depend on what the results are. I think if the Flames start kind of continuing to win, I think that you could see Zahorna and Phillips staying, sticking around. But if it's more of the same, or it's a regression back, I wonder what's going to happen. I mean, but to me, I'm sort of in a wait and see mode with both of them. I liked what I saw, but I want to see a little bit more. And we've got some divisional games and we've got some interconference games coming up here that I think will tell us a lot more where the Flames are at.
Yeah, and I agree. The first checkpoint basically for the two players they met at, I think that, you know, they played adequately enough in the games that they appeared. But it's like, as Kevin was saying, like, we just need to see more. And like, if Phillips can start putting some points on the board, and like Zahorna maybe as well, then the more that they do, the more that they'll entrench themselves in the lineup. And if they don't, then we could see them getting reassigned back down.
I think we're all kind of saying the same thing. I think in baseball, they call it wins against replacement. But if these guys are better than the guys they're replacing, they'll stick around. If they're not, they won't. Is that kind of a fair way to say this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was surprised that Milan Lucic came out of the lineup. I mean, this is a very Daryl Sutter player, and I kind of expected Daryl would maybe play Lucic more than he should because he's a very Daryl Sutter player. So I want to give Daryl credit for taking Milan out of the lineup. We talked about this last week on the show with Mike Gold that, you know, maybe it's time for Lucic to come out. I think if I look at these two, I can see Zahorna sticking around in the Lucic role and making Lucic the extra forward. I think Phillips has more to prove on this team and more that he has to do to stick around. I think it's an easy thing to just keep Zahorna here and play that big man, big body. I mean, he's what, 6'7"? He is 220 pounds. So, you know, bigger kid that I think they could keep around just because of that. But I think Phillips is going to really have to work hard, and you have to ask what's best for Phillips. Is it to go back to the AHL and be the big fish in a small pond, or is it stay in the NHL and be literally the smallest fish in the big pond?
What does Phillips have to prove to you?
I don't think he has to prove anything to me, but he has to prove, I think, to the coaching staff that if he's staying on a third line role, which is where he is, I think that he can keep up at the NHL and that it's not going to hinder his development.
Yeah, for me, I think that Phillips just needs to start establishing himself as an actual NHL player now. Because when you're tearing up the A like you have been for like the last year and a half, he's 24. Like, there's not really any more road down there for him where he hasn't already hit all the highs that he can.
Are you an NHL player? Or are you a quad A player?
And you can only really get that verdict by playing up here. And, you know, if he struggles at the NHL level, and like, say we're talking like 10 games from now, assuming he stays up for that long, and he has like, say, 3 points, then you're like, well, I don't think that you're quite NHL caliber right at the moment. But, you know, if he's at like 7 or 8 points or more, you know, because you never know, then you're like, oh, well, you're firmly establishing yourself as an actual player worthy of ice time, and maybe you should get more responsibilities. But, you know, that will literally be all on Phillips and how he plays.
I mean, considering that Phillips is up and Rooney's down, do you guys think it's fair to say, and the fact that Phillips kind of supplanted Coleman in the lineup, do you think it's fair to say Phillips has to be better than Coleman and Rooney to stay?
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Yep. He
and
does.
I think maybe that's the push there is, you know, Matthew, be better than Blake and you stick.
Well, and I think this is also a message to like the whole team, frankly, of, you guys have basically been playing lousy for the first 26 games. And, you know, like, this kind of stuff's not acceptable. And so we're going to start making roster adjustments accordingly. And
Daryl Sutter said that, Matt, in I forget which press conference. They all kind of blur together to me. Old man in front of banner after a while. You forget when he says what. But he kind of said there was no competition in his eyes coming out of training camp. So now they're trying
to create
some
competition. That was the Toronto game. That was the Toronto game.
That's why
we
keep you around, Kevin.
Not just because of my good looks, eh?
That's right. So yeah, I think that that's what they're doing is they're creating that competition. And, you know, I agree with Matt and we've had this discussion and Kevin, we've had this discussion on your show, Shifts and Pucks. I don't know if Phillips is a bona fide NHLer. I think he's showing he's too good for the AHL. I don't know that he's ready to join a, let's call it a team built for the playoffs in the National Hockey League. I think he's got to prove that.
Yeah, and I think even at, like right now, all we can say is, well, here's your shot, kid. Have fun. And, you know, if you sink, that's your problem. If you swim, that's great.
I think everything that happens to Phillips at this point is on Matthew Phillips. Matthew Phillips will decide Matthew Phillips' fate.
Now, the other way to look at this, though, too, is maybe Matthew Phillips becomes a bit of a trade ship to get that established forward that you are missing in that lineup or a piece that you're missing in that lineup in terms of a prospect. And if he plays well enough, that can attract some trade value maybe too. Because ultimately, I guess the question will always be is if Matthew Phillips will be a Daryl Sutter guy. And I'm not sure where I'm at with that. I think that Daryl is a bit more ahead of his time than a lot of people give him credit for. Is he stubborn? Sure. But he's given people opportunities if they've earned it. Like, we look at Adam Ruzicka. I mean, it took a little while, but Adam Ruzicka is now finding his way. Oliver Shillington last year, he found his way. So, I mean, if Phillips does his thing, I think that Daryl will be – I don't think Daryl is going to look at this guy and say, well, he's 5'8", I don't – or 5-whatever, and I won't play him.
If he can produce to the NHL level, any coach, including Daryl, is smart enough to know you got to keep him on the roster.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you mentioned that, Kevin. I've been thinking about that. I'm thinking, you know what? I think they've got to see – and Matt's mentioned that at the end of the year, the Flames lose their controlling rights to Matthew Phillips. I think the Flames will see what they've got here. And is this a player that's going to help us, or is this a player that can help us by being here or by being traded for something else? And I would not be surprised if Matthew Phillips was included as part of a deal at the deadline if the Flames think that's where his usefulness is, because I think they could get something for him.
Yeah, if he produces, I think that there would be a couple of teams that would take a little bit of a look at him for sure.
You're not getting Brock Besser for him, but you might be able to recoup some picks.
Yeah, I would. I don't know, what it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the deadline. I think there's a few teams with a number of different questions, but I think playing him with a guy like Michael Backlund, I think Backlund is a good player to establish yourself with. I wouldn't say he's the best all-around forward on the team, but he's the most reliable forward on the team. He's the most consistent at times. One of those guys, like, you can put someone with Backlund and your game will get going and you'll understand the game of hockey. Like, he just plays it in a certain way that it makes sense for people. So that was, I think, good. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I think it's going to be it's going to be a very interesting argument going forward with Matthew Phillips, because I think there's going to be people that will defend him to the end, and that's totally fair. You have every right to do that. But I think ultimately we'll have to be honest at the end of this assessment of where he's at. And
Matt, do you think that Phillips is in the right spot in the lineup right now?
Yeah, I think that, like, sheltering him a bit on the third line and having Backlund and Ruzicka, who are both bigger than him, and Backlund definitely being more defensively responsible, allows Phillips the maneuverability to do his thing. And, you know, having him out on the second power play unit also makes a ton of sense. Like, he actually nearly got his first point in the game yesterday. when Mangiapane fired one off the post. And it's one of those where, you know, if he can keep doing that and contributing on the power play, then that'll be great. And like, actually, last night when overtime started, I was hoping that we would see Phillips out there for a shift because he had that assist on Stone's overtime game-winning goal in the preseason. And, you know, he has shown that kind of creativity. So we'll see. You know, it's one of those where we're at a point where literally nobody knows what the answer will be. And, you know, like, I've been a very ardent supporter of Phillips in this lineup and, you know, wanting him recalled for a while now. And like, even if like after 10 games, like he's not producing, then even like I'll be, yeah, well, it's just not working out right now.
You got to give him a fair shake and see what happens, but you can't be overly invested in the result.
Yep.
I mean, I don't have a necessarily, I mean, Dan, you mentioned getting Lucic out of the lineup and you were surprised about that. I guess the other question about all of this is, I don't, and maybe it's me, but I'm not been one that has thought that Brett Ritchie has been all that bad this year.
No.
Like in terms of the fourth line, I think that they've been, you know, I haven't expected much from them. And I mean, Brett Ritchie has 5 goals. I don't think, I mean, there's been a time there he was ahead of Dylan, both Dubé and Andre Mangiapane with goals in this year. I don't, like, I do also think you got to keep Ritchie, you got to find a way to keep Brett Ritchie in this lineup as well, too, right? Like, if we're about people earning ice time, Brett Ritchie has earned ice time. And
yeah, of the 4 guys that have been the fourth line, between Lucic, Lewis, Ritchie, and Rooney, Ritchie has been the only consistently good one out of the bunch. Lewis has been okay, and the other two, not so much.
And I mean, no. I don't think Blake Coleman's a fourth line guy. I think he's there because that's where he fits right now. But I think Zahorna and Ritchie will end up sort of being your fourth line pairing, and it's a matter of who goes down there with them.
Yeah, but at the same time, I do think it's fair that it is time to expect a little bit more from Blake Coleman. I don't think he's had that good of a year, to be honest with you.
No, and I think that's why he's on the fourth line.
Yeah. He's got the same amount of goals as Brett Ritchie, but I don't feel like he's had a huge impact on the year.
No.
No, it's sporadic for him, more so than anything.
When we talk about guys and what we've got there, we did get a fan question this week. Actually, another friend of the show, Kevin, your co-host on the Shifts and Pucks podcast, Sean, Beardy Cannot Go 3 on Twitter, asked us, and Matt and I have debated this a lot, what is Dylan Dubé? So why don't I start with my thoughts here, and then I'll throw to you guys. I've said since, I think, you know, Dubé came to the NHL, I don't see this guy as a top 6. I think Dubé is a bottom 6 guy, probably a third-line winger at best, a replacement top 6 when you need him to for a short term. But I think Dubé's in over his head right now simply because we don't have a winger. And I can see this lineup shaking down where either Phillips or Rujicka becomes the winger with Kadri and Mangiapane. I can see Dubé then either landing on the third line or replacing Coleman on the fourth line and shifting Coleman up. But I don't think that Dubé is what some fans think he is, being that top 6 guy. I know, you know, Matt's been a big fan of Dubé's, but I think you're going to see him max out in his career as a, you know, third line winger. Kevin, what do you think?
I think the skill of Dylan Dubé is there. When he is on, him and Andre Mangiapane, the Flames have been better. It's no coincidence that the team has started winning when the Kadri, Dubé, Mangiapane line has played as well. And for what it's worth, for what the expectations have been, I need to emphasize this, for what the expectations have been, and until a couple weeks ago, I would argue that the Kadri, Dubé, Mangiapane line has been the worst line on the team for what was expected. Like, you could argue the fourth line was worse, but in terms of what you need from them, it's below expectation, but you're not expecting much. I would argue with Kadri, Dubé, Mangiapane, it's been much lower than expected. But when Dubé is on, I think he is a 6-7. Not always a top 6, but a guy that you can replace. But Ultimately, I would say he is a third line on a good team. He's a third line, kind of a JT Compher type of guy that you can fit in situations when you need a replacement. But ultimately, if you're going to win a championship, he's in your third line.
Yeah.
But an NHLer.
Yeah, I agree. And like with both Mangiapane and Dubé, like we've seen each of them struggle mightily throughout the course of the season. And Dubé looked like, as he was engaging a lot more physically towards the end of last season, that he would establish himself more, because like he knew what it would take to be successful, and like it was doing that consistently in the last month of last year. But then like what we're seeing is like the first few months of Dylan Dubé last year, where he was the just their guy, and like, you know, who Sutter eventually benched for a few games.
Dylan Dubé's not a bad player. He's a serviceable NHL player, I think, in your bottom six. Like Kevin said, when he turns it on, you get great offense. And I think teams are willing to pay for that potential of that offense, especially in the playoffs. But I think when we're looking at our top six here, I think the fact that Dubé's still in it still shows the Flames of a hole there.
Yeah, and frankly, like I'd like to see Phillips and Dubé switch at some point.
I agree. Yep. And, you know, I mean, I've said this for a while. Kevin, you were mentioning maybe having Phillips as a trade chip. I've said for a couple of years, I think Dubé could be a trade chip for this team.
I don't know what the value is for him, though.
Like, I don't think him by himself, but, I think if you're trying to put together some sort of package, you could move Dubé as part of it.
I don't know. Do you mean as, like, these the principal piece of this package that a team is getting back?
No, let's say the Flames were going to move, say, a pick like they did last year, say, for Yarncroke. You might move, say, a pick in Dubé to free up some cap space for, you know, one player coming back.
Maybe.
You're not going to need to pay. Let's just say you're not going to need to pay somebody to take Dubé off our hands. If you needed to move money or move, you know, bodies, I think you wouldn't have to pay someone to take him like you might with some other guys in this team.
But don't you think the Flames have tried to trade Dubé?
I think so. Yeah. But, you know, markets always change, right?
Yeah, it's kind of hard under, like, everything that's happened over the last calendar year where, I don't really think that anybody's safe other than the new guys with the long-term contracts, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that not to trade Dubé. That's not what I'm saying.
Let me put this scenario out there, Kevin. So let's say Phillips stays in the lineup and Rogichka stays in the lineup. The Flames go out of the deadline and get somebody. Patrick Kane has been a name that Matt's mentioned. They get somebody. You have an odd man out. I think you could flip Dubé at that point for even a third or fourth and get some value out of it.
Yeah, no, I can see that. We keep having this conversation though, and I just wonder if we as Flame fans overrate him a little bit. I feel like he's got a little bit of a this sort of reminds me of the Jesse Puljujärvi argument in Edmonton, where I think Flame fans think he's better than he actually is.
And that's fair.
Let's be honest here. Dubé went 16 games without a goal, and I don't think for what Dubé is getting paid for, I don't think that that's remotely acceptable
at all. And I think Flames fans have always been high on the guys they draft and develop, and I think maybe he's getting a longer leash with fans because of that, because he's, you know, a Flames born and bred guy.
Yeah, and I know that that's something I think that fans always do, right, is they defend the guy that you bring into the lineup. I mean, we look at that Yusuf Välimäki. Yusuf Välimäki was a guy that I think a lot of Flame fans defended because he was Flames developer, but ultimately he wasn't a fit with Daryl Sutter, and I think it was best for him to move on. I think we're seeing the same with Dubé, but I don't know – I think the reason that Sean asked that question is it's really hard to kind of figure out. It's a mystery to figure out what Dubé is, because there is skill enough for him to be a top six forward. I feel like there's something between his ears that is missing. And I just something about him as a person, I mean, like him, whatever his mental game right now is not where it needs to be.
No, but really, I would argue hasn't been since he turned pro.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's 24. He's still a young guy. And, you know, I mean, we're seeing Zahorna, or not Zahorna, we're seeing Adam Rzeczka figure it out. And as Matt's mentioned, you know, a big knock of Rzeczka's in junior was inconsistency. So maybe Dylan will get together. But I guess how long do you give him to try and do that?
Yeah, no, I think that leash has went on far too long. And I think that this was one of the things that kind of bugged me about the whole Lucic, Lewis, Richie argument about everybody was talking about how bad that fourth line was, is I don't think that there was enough criticism about Kadri, Dubé, and Mangiapane overall. Like, I don't think Mangiapane has been better, but he hasn't been good this year, and Dubé has not been good enough. They've both been not nearly good enough. And the problem with them not being productive is it hasn't really allowed Jonathan Huberdeau to get his game together. I know that Huberdeau is struggling, but if Dubé and Mangiapane were scoring more goals, that would allow Huberdeau to kind of be able to easily gel himself in. But you can kind of see, and you saw that certainly in the Toronto game, I saw it. He's starting to get frustrated, right? So I think ultimately it is time for Dubé to get that push. And I've been an advocate that there's a legitimate argument to scratch Dylan Dubé. I think that that's something, you know, I think that it has to be something on the table here, especially if you're getting something out of Rzeczka and you're going to play Phillips. Maybe Dubé needs to sit a couple of games and figure it out.
And maybe that's what Matthew Phillips is being told, is, you know what? Show us we can put you in that Dubé spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully, Sean, we've answered that question. If not, let us know and we can readdress it next week. Another guy, though, I think we should discuss the future of is Kevin Rooney. Kevin Rooney was we were all waiting to see after Johnny Gaudreau left, who the Flames sign on day one of free agency. Who do the Flames sign on day one of free agency? And they go out and sign Kevin Rooney to a 2-year deal, $1.3 million per year. I think it was more than I expect him to be and a year longer than I expected to be. And now we see him in the AHL. Kevin, do you think that Kevin Rooney is going to come back to the NHL this year? Do you think that he, you know, let's say barring injury, or do you think he's probably an AHL player for the remainder of the year?
Well, first of all, I think that I wasn't as upset about the Kevin Rooney signing as other people. I just think that that kind of reminded me. I mean, is it a first day, second day, early free agent signing?
I wasn't opposed to the signing itself. I just don't think that you should have given him 1.3 for 2 years.
Yeah, I was kind of rooting for Kevin Rooney because I think he was kind of caught in a bit of a rough spot. He was the guy that ended up replacing Johnny Gaudreau in terms of the perception of, like, this is the massive move. And everybody was really upset on July 1st and all of that. And I was more, I wanted to give him a shot. He hasn't been good enough this year. I will grant you that. But I still think you need him. I really do. Like, I think that there's stuff that if he can get his game back, he can be a good face-off guy. He can be a very serviceable fourth line guy. And put in utility situations that, I think he can help. Is it working out for him at this particular point in time? No. Will a time in the AHL help him? Probably. But, I still think they'll need him. I really do. I don't think that this is, like, I think that he has a lot to offer. It just hasn't quite worked out yet.
I would agree with you. And I think we'll see him back here. I think he needs some time to get his game together. He needs some time to figure out maybe what he is. I think that the Flames by playoffs will have him back on the roster because I think that, like you said, they need him there. And I think he had to be sent down for one of these two guys to come up. And it's going to be a matter of, I guess, who they would want to move to bring him back onto this team, because they would need to make a move at this point to get rid of somebody. But I think you're right. He's a good veteran. I thought he was fine when they brought him in for the role they were asking him to play. If you're asking him to be a Johnny Gaudreau replacement, that's not what you want. But, you know, for a fourth line center, yeah, I think he deserves a spot here. But I think, you know, if we're going with the guys who've earned it, I think they were right to send him to the American League right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he has. Yeah. I don't think it was a wrong decision at all. Yeah. I don't think it's been a wrong decision. I'm still pulling for him. I still think there's something to offer. I mean, let's look at it here. I mean, he had one of the games in the last little while here. He sets up Lucic for a perfect pass. Lucic shoots it right into the goalie's crest. Right into the middle of the crest there. So, like, I don't know. I think that there's more to give there. I really do.
If you get him back, someone else is going to have to falter. Would you disagree?
Can he do more? To me, this comes down to, I guess, the debate to me in terms of role. This is a Kevin Rooney or Trevor Lewis role, right? Because Lewis kills penalties. That's been the argument of why you're keeping Trevor Lewis in the lineup, is he's killing penalties. So if Rooney is proven to be an effective penalty killer, I would think that ends up to be, you debate whether Rooney or Lewis is that forward. And then you have...
one of his things for bringing in Lewis, too, was the playoff experience.
Sure, but... But at the same time, going forward in the playoffs, do they have, like, to me, the Flames looked a lot more, like on Saturday, they looked a lot more, they played with a lot more pace than they have in the last little while with that fourth, the what I've affectionately called the law firm of Lewis, Lucic, and Richie. They've looked a lot more in pace with that. I'm struggling a little bit. My struggle is here, to me, and we had this conversation in the offseason, I don't think Trevor Lewis is a higher than a number 10 forward in the National Hockey League now. I think he's a serviceable 11-12, but I also think that Kevin Rooney can be a guy that in a pinch you can put in a top 10 role, like 10-9 role, third line, like not regularly, but he can be a guy if there's injured. I think that he can fill that spot. I think he's got the speed to do it. He has he has that ability to be a faster Swiss Army knife than Daryl Sutter is deploying Trevor Lewis to be, if that makes sense.
That's fair. Well, I guess only time will tell what happens with Kevin Rooney and if he makes it back to the NHL roster or not. But while we're thinking about guys that may or may not be on the Flames NHL roster, there's been some interesting discussion this week from Calgary Flames and Vancouver Canucks camps about the Flames maybe sniffing around on Brock Besser. And Kevin, I know you also cover the Canucks on Shifts and Pucks. Can you give us some background on where this comes from?
Okay, so yeah, let's start from the beginning here. Last week, Brock Besser was scratched, scheduled to be a healthy scratch for the game against the Arizona Coyotes. That was at the morning skate. It was supposed to be Dakota Joshua taking over for the lineup for Brock Besser. According to Bruce Boudreau, after the game, Besser ends up playing, ends up getting the tying goal. And according to Boudreau, Dakota Joshua got hurt. And Besser ended up being in the lineup. Now, the whole controversy around this specifically with Besser is that was Hockey Fights Cancer Night. And so Brock has been very upfront and very vulnerable about his father, Duke, who passed away this year. He passed away from Parkinson's, but he did battle cancer as well. So it was a very emotional time. And then Elliot Friedman reported on the 32 Thoughts second intermission that Besser's camp has been granted permission to speak to other teams, which in loose translation means that the Canucks have tried to trade Brock Besser, but they haven't been able to do it. So that's what comes out of here and why we are in this situation where Brock Besser is apparently on the block. And then Rick Dhaliwal said this week that the Flames were poking around on Brock Besser. And I don't think that Rick Dhaliwal would be saying anything that without that being, yes, of course, everybody pokes around on everybody, but I do would believe that Dhaliwal, there was some substance to it if the Rick Dhaliwal report. Yes, he's a reliable guy. Here's the situation. Brock Besser has 4 goals this year. I know that he is a 20-30 goal scorer, but you are in a position to be a healthy scratch. He has 4 goals this year. He has struggled, especially defensively. He just signed a 3-year, $6 million a year contract, $6.5 million a year contract. I just, from my perspective, from the Flames doing this, I don't see this as a fit. And it's only not only the contract, but you look at what the Flames have done here in terms of bringing all these new players in, trying to get everybody adjusted and acclimatized, and that's been an issue. I mean, I think we can clearly agree that that's been an issue. Adding Besser into this entire mix, I don't know if that works for me. I just don't know where the Flames are at adding this piece. And the other thing about this is the trade value. I think that this is an Oliver similar. I think to me, any other team that is not in the Pacific Division, I would say that this is a similar to the Oliver Borgstrand deal with Columbus made this with Seattle, which was a third and fourth round pick. I think that that's what Besser gets anywhere else but with the Flames. I think it's going to cost a little bit more than that. Because it's a division rival and potentially a playoff rival. Just to me, I think with the acquisition cost, it doesn't make sense for me to the Flames should be in on Brock Besser.
Yeah, Calgary realistically needs a top nine scorer. Whether Matthew Phillips, he can emerge as that, or even if he does, I think the Flames could still use another guy to generate some offense, because with everybody currently struggling a little bit, like, they just need options. And Besser is a right shot right winger. The Flames really don't have too many of those in the lineup, so from just that standpoint, it makes some sense. But, you know, mostly it comes down to acquisition costs. And as Kevin said, the equivalent of a third or fourth, and, you know, maybe a little bit more than that because of the divisional rival, makes some sense. He's only 25, so he's same age as Mangiapane. He definitely fits in. Yeah, it's one of those where if, like, he doesn't work out, then, like, the he stays basically at the similar, like, 40-50 point production. That's obviously not great use of assets, but you also look at some expiring contracts that the team have. You can reallocate some of that money to getting Besser. I think that you'd have to include some money going back the other way, like a Dylan Dubé, just to shed some money as well in this deal. But
I don't think that they want to. I know that a lot of people were throwing out the idea that you could throw Lucic in this as a possibility, because that's not going to happen. I don't see the money eating part of that happening. I think they if they trade Besser, they didn't want to clear the entire $6 million of it.
I agree, but the Flames still got to find $4 million then.
Yeah, the only reason why I would suggest Dubé is because Dubé is at least a serviceable player that's roughly worth what he's getting paid. So, him being at a 2.3. That's more or less, and the Flames can. It's just complicated at that rate. And
Kevin, when the Besser deal was signed, were Canucks fans thinking there's a good deal, bad deal? What was the thought in Vancouver?
I think it was a little bit of an indifference. I think people said, yeah, that's good. The one that raged everybody was the JT Miller one because it was an 8-year one, and that didn't make sense. I mean, now you're in a situation in Vancouver, too, where it's quite likely now you're trading Bo Horvat, who is third in the league in goals with 19, and because he's a UFA. I don't know. I mean, it just with what he's been at this year, I just don't. I mean, there's a hope that he can get back to where he is, and I certainly hope that, and I think he needs a new place of scenery for sure. I guess my question,
I just don't know. I want to spend $6.5 million for 3 years on this guy.
Yeah. And is he giving you anything different than Tyler Toffoli is? That's the question that I would have.
I would even ask if he's giving you anything more than Dubé at this point.
I would say yes.
Yeah, I would say yes to that too.
For the money you're paying him, is he giving you more than Mangiapane?
And the room goes silent. I would not be trading Besser for Mangiapane. No,
I wouldn't either. But I'm just looking at, if you're acquiring that much money, are you getting an upgrade on a guy who's cheaper?
Yeah. Yeah, and I
think they're about in the same ballpark right at this point. And, you know, Calgary is, because of the fact that they're not a team that's going to, like, they losing Gaudreau and Tkachuk, like, they don't have the guys that can create the offense all by themselves. I think, like, having a bunch of really good quality players in their lineup will help, like, just to distribute where, like, anybody can score at any given time. And having a guy like Besser, it does make sense. But the contract, it's going to be hard for the Flames to maneuver that one. And I think that, like, you might have to get a little creative, like shipping Lucic out for whatever, just to any team to, you know, get rid of that cap hit.
I don't know about you guys, but I find with this one, and I'm saying this more and more to people who bring up fantasy trade scenarios to me, I like the player, I don't like the contract.
Yeah. I think that, like, he's more of like a $5-ish million player getting 6.5. And, you know, like, that's not bad. It's just, it's hard to navigate with a lot of guys that are kind of in that middle zone.
If the Flames are going to take on that much money, I can think of a handful of guys I'd rather take on that much money for.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to me, I think, just, we talked a little bit earlier about the missing of Eric Gabranson. I mean, to me, if I was to target anyone on Vancouver from a Flames perspective, I think Luke Shen would be the guy. I think Luke Shen brings a lot of what Eric Gabranson brings to the lineup. I think, you know, you could argue where he is in the lineup in terms of where he's playing with, but to me, he's everything that Gabranson was last year, and I think he'd be a very valuable piece.
And a cheap acquisition, too.
And a cheap acquisition cost. And the Flames, I do believe, in order for to have a long playoff run, you need 8 quality defensemen.
I agree.
Yeah, so, and I think Luke Shen would be a guy that you need. I'm not convinced, though,
Kevin, that we don't get Shillington back this year. So I think we got to wait and see what happens there.
Well, even with Shillington, I would still argue you could use it. It wouldn't hurt to have a Shen.
That's true. Better than
because Mackie. We don't know when Shillington A is going to be back, and we don't know the shape he's going to be in when he's back.
That's true. Yeah, and Shen greater than Mackie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I would easily play Shen over Stone right now.
I agree.
And
what's Shen's contract? No,
and when it comes to Shillington, I think that what you'll likely see when he's ready to come back, if he is this season, he'll probably play 2 or 3 weeks down on the farm just to get his legs under him before.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if they can put him on a conditioning stint or not.
Yeah, well, you can. Like the Golden or Kraken did that with Shane Wright. So, we'll see.
So, Kevin, you wanted to chat this week about goaltending.
Well, I think it's certainly a topic for sure in Calgary right now. We had the situation where Markstrom said he sucked at hockey. So, I think we all were, maybe this guy needs a bit of a break. He played really well against Columbus. and Darryl didn't like the goals 2 and 4 that Vladar play allowed against Toronto. I certainly think we're getting marks from Monday. I think we get marks from the rest of the week. I think that this this is the time we were about to go to a lot of interconference 4-point games. You've got marks from Montreal. You've got marks from against his old team against Vancouver, and then you got St. Louis as well, who's battling for a playoff spot. And it's probably similar to the Flames in the sense of trying to figure out what they are at this particular point in time. This would be the time to see where we're at with Markstrom. That's kind of where I'm at this point.
Yeah, it's tough because you don't want to send a message to Vladar of, oh, you had one start where you gave up 5 goals and it not necessarily being entirely your fault. The Leafs capitalize on 3 power plays. But, if you go back to Markstrom, entirely this week, it's kind of like, well, you're good enough to play only if you're perfect. And then if you have one bad game, oh, well, the other guy's going back in. But it's just tough because of the fact where the Flames are at, because Markstrom needs to reestablish himself too. And he played well against Columbus. And yeah, it would almost be beneficial to almost alternate them for a bit, literally one start, and until everybody gets going and see how things are, because it's just kind of tough because you don't want to hit Vladar as well and at the same time, and it's just awkward.
I think
go
ahead, Kevin.
Sorry. My thing is, though, too, is at what point, we haven't seen Vladar have that lengthy number one stretch. And to me, still, Markstrom is the number one guy. Vladar, he's playing well. And you have to kind of see where you're at with Markstrom. And this is probably the week to do it because you got a very busy week coming up. You got a very busy schedule after this. You've got your first West Coast trip. You get San Jose, Anaheim, and LA. And I know those teams are bad, but those teams also have given the Flames trouble over the years as well. So you need to kind of see where you're at this point with Markstrom. So that's why I would give Markstrom the week.
I don't think now the Flames have a starter. I think the starter job is up for grabs. I think we've seen Vladar play pretty much a whole week, and he looked good. I think we've seen Markstrom falter a bit. I agree. We got to put Markstrom in some point. I'd probably do Montreal, maybe Vancouver. But I think you've got to really evaluate on ice, off ice, practice, everything that's going into these guys and trust our goaltending department to make the right choice. But I think Calgary got into trouble last year because they relied too heavily on one guy.
Yeah.
They relied too heavily on just Markstrom. So I think if Vladdy can do it, let Vladdy do it and let's see what we got there. We got to see if this guy is, and I don't want to put too much pressure on him, maybe if it's the next Kiprusoff or if he's, the next Kari Ramo. Is this guy, or even David Riddick, is he a starter? Is he a backup? Is he sort of a 1B? I think we've got to run Vladdy until he loses, but until his good run is over.
Yeah, it's tough because young goaltenders are, it's hard to get a read on them until you play them enough. And, Vladar has looked very impressive through most of his playing time the last few weeks. If you look at the Flames playoffs last year, after the first round, Markstrom was basically done because of how having to go mano a mano with Ottinger for 7 grueling games where he had to basically be perfect because the other guy was playing a Dominic Hasek mode. And it's one of those where, if Vladar had been playing enough down the stretch, you could have reliably thrown him in at game 3 or game 4. But at that point, he had only played 1 game or 2 games in 2 months. And that's just not fair to the guy to come in that cold. Yeah. Oh, go stop the 2 best players in the NHL. Have fun. It's just not feasible. And so it's this whole stretch. It is, Kevin's right. I'm right, and it's hard because we're both right.
I'm okay being like, the guy how that's do you wrong. Navigate that?
Yeah, well,
it had to come.
You're not wrong either. Like, everybody's right on this one, and it's hard.
I think if I if I was the coach, I'd put Markstrom in against Montreal. See what you get there. If he looks good, I'd put him in against Vancouver. See what you get there. If he still looks good, put him in against St. Louis and let him earn his way back to the starting spot. But I think if he's not great in any of those, I would sort of default back to Vladar instead of default back to Markstrom, yeah. If that makes sense.
What I think we can all agree on is you will need two goalies for the playoff run. And the days of playing a goalie 60 games in a season is over right now. Like, yeah. It's just not possible. And Markstrom's got enough wear and tear that you just simply can't do it. And it's just, you know, the mental game. No. Like to me, that screamed, like, Markstrom saying sucked at hockey screamed a number of issues at me. And I think it's just, you can't put him in as much as you have.
I agree.
Yeah, it did scream burnout. Yeah. And, and that's fine. You know, and like, thankfully, Vladar playing so well has allowed and afforded him some time to recollect himself. And, you know, confidence with goaltending is paramount. And if you don't have it, you're kind of screwed. And, you know, and you could see, especially like how Markstrom's played, like it was more. Like, even I think he was getting to a point where, okay, when am I going to allow the bad goal? And instead of, you know, focusing on being good, you know, it was more focusing on the negative. And he's looked better, but, you know, we need to see more. And hopefully he can just sort everything out. And the beneficial thing with the relationship that the two goalies have is that they are both very supportive of one another,
yep, off the, of the like on the week.
Ice. And, you know, and I'm just hoping that they're pushing each other to get through. Cause you know, like it is a team in this instance. And, you know, like there's no illusions that Vladar is going to be the permanent starter on this team. Like, you know, for as long as Markstrom's here, he is the de facto starter. But
I think we also have to figure out post Markstrom, is it Vladar? Is it Wolf? Like, what is the future of Calgary's net hold?
Yeah. But like, as like this current group, like, you know, you're having to make sure that everybody's supportive of each other, mm-hmm. and like kind of working together as a team, which we've seen some difficulties with the forwards and the defensemen at times this season working together as a team as well. And so with those guys working together, hopefully it spreads out throughout the rest of the team and everybody gets going a little bit better.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, guys, not so much news from this week, but we have some news that's a bit of a blast from the past. In 2003, the Edmonton Oilers hosted the Heritage Classic. They won 4-3 over the Montreal Canadiens, and it looks like they may be hosting it again. The news out there is that in 2023, the Calgary Flames will be going to Edmonton to play outdoor in Commonwealth Stadium against the Oilers. It should be an October game, so much nicer weather. But I think we're out of retro jerseys for these two teams to wear. We've kind of exhausted both teams' retro looks. Kevin, what do you think? Are you excited for this?
Yeah, I am. And I think that there's an opportunity here for a couple of things to happen. The 2003, that was the opportunity for the Oilers to kind of bring back all the old 80s greats, the Gretzky's, the Messiers, the Coffees. This is an opportunity now to bring back the Doug Waits, the Ryan Smith, the Bill Guerin's, kind of the other
on the other side, the Jerome Iginla's.
And yeah, exactly. I was about to say the Conroy's, the Iginla's, the Martin Tangelina's, Robin Regier's, kind of those guys. And bring them out and get them their shine and their glory.
Who does Freddie Brathwaite dress for?
I don't know. You know, I mean, if Grant Fuhr was to play, who does he dress for?
Well, I think we could say the Fuhr had more success than Oilers.
And so who does Dwayne Roloson play for? Well, Roloson would play for the Oilers because he went to the finals with them, right? But
yeah,
I think it's going to be
Steve Smith.
That's a good point.
I think he's always a Calgary Flame. He just didn't know it.
Yeah, that's right. And who does Glenn Gullickson coach for? And who does he throw a stick at? Which bench does he throw a stick at?
So many questions.
So many questions. But yeah, no, I think it's going to be, I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I hope that Calgary comes up there and goes up there and they represent well. And yeah, I think October, it still has the potential to be cold, but not too cold. Yeah, it'll be fun. I think it'll be a neat little thing. And this is, I believe, would be Connor McDavid. This is the sad thing about the NHL. Whole other topic, but for the love of God, how is this Connor McDavid's first outdoor game?
They've always skewed more towards the States with the outdoor games.
Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on this? Excited for?
Well, you know, because everybody's always amped for the Dallas-Minnesota matchups and, you know, Colorado versus whomever they play. Sure. Anyhow, you know, I'm glad that Calgary is playing another outdoor game. It's always nice whenever your team is doing something different. It'll be interesting to see what type of jerseys that they'll wear. I think that with both teams kind of embracing their past over the last few years, with the Oilers going back to their original jerseys for their home and road, and Calgary doing the same, that I think they might skew maybe going experimental mode and going futuristic for something different. But
the most futuristic I can see them doing is like Blasty versus the Cog.
Well, you never know. Like, we've seen some rather out there outdoor game ones for the States teams. Like, I know the Kings had that really weird jersey that they wore a few times after their outdoor game. So, you know, we'll see. That's always, like, one of the more fun things about that type of a weekend is, like, what kind of threads are they going to wear?
I like the threads. I like the alumni games. And Kevin, you follow the Dub. What do you think the chance we get Calgary Edmonton playing a Dub game there?
I think that would be a great idea, to be honest with you. And I think the WHL could use that exposure. Yeah,
I wouldn't even be opposed, frankly, if they brought Edmonton's farm team and the Calgary Wranglers there. Well,
they
did
that last time the Flames played outside. They brought Edmonton's farm team and Calgary's and played them at the Dome.
Yep. Yeah, I think you can make a whole event out of that.
For sure.
I don't know if you could do, yeah, you can make a whole hockey event out of that. And I think that that would be great. I think it would be a lot of fun. And, you know, I think it's great for the travel for the two cities. I still think the economy obviously would be great for both economies as well. So,
yeah, you'll get a lot of Calgary fans going up there. I think, you know, we'd probably see a big Sea Red contingent.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I think that about wraps it up. Kevin, we always appreciate having you on the show. We love when we can chat with you. And for those that want to hear more of you, where can they do that?
Well, you could, we're going to focus on the Flames and the Canucks. I do a daily news pack. Just started this recently, just to keep abreast of all the news going on. Of course, especially when you're in podcast format, you kind of tend to miss some of the other things that are going on in the National Hockey League. And they may or may not affect your team, but what it does, it tells you the trends of what's going on and where really your team is at. So I do a daily news pack, focus on the NHL, talk a little AHL, WHL, or other things that are going on in hockey as well. So I'll either preview or recap those. Those will be in the afternoon this week because I'm working evenings, so as opposed to afternoons, which I have been working for the last little bit.
Don't you hate it when work gets in the way of hockey?
Yeah, stupid work. But the other thing is, as well, we'll have our Canucks focus on Monday, talk about all the issues there. Bo Horvat, Brock Besser, all of what's going on there. And then Thursday, we'll be back to talk about the Flames and see kind of where they're at. This will be it'll be an interesting week. Montreal, again, and a first Flames-Canucks matchup. So will be interesting to see. So you can find us on Twitter at Shifts and Pucks, Facebook.com Shifts and Pucks, YouTube.com Shifts and Pucks. Subscribe wherever you get your audio, as well as on the Area 51 Sports Network. And you can follow me on Twitter at KEVOLE.
That was a mouthful. Take a drink, take a breath.
Yes.
The only thing we have left to do is our predictions. And as always, we predict how the week is going to play itself out. Last week, the Flames won against Arizona, Minnesota, lost Columbus and Toronto. So pretty much one at home, lost on the road. I pretty much predicted that. I didn't think we'd get the 1 point. I didn't necessarily predict that, but that's okay. So Matt, I'm starting to catch up with you again. You got a bit ahead of me here. You predicted that we would win Arizona, Columbus, Toronto, and lose to Minnesota. So, Kevin, if you want to make some predictions this week, you're welcome to, but let's jump in. I'll start with mine. I think Calgary's going to have a hard time against Montreal. They tend to play down to poor opponents, and it's just something the Flames tend to do. And I can see them playing down to Montreal. I think they'll beat Vancouver, and I'll be optimistic and say they're going to beat St. Louis. So I'll say win Vancouver, St. Louis, lose Montreal. Matt, how about you?
I'm going to go the opposite, say that they're going to beat Montreal and then lose to the other two.
Why is that?
They've just been a little too sloppy lately. Like even the two games they won this week, they were not very good performances by the team. And like if they had come out a little bit better against Arizona and were more decisively beating them, I'd say that they have a better shot. But both Vancouver and St. Louis are playing well. Montreal's bad, and like we should have beat them the last time if not for Jake Allen standing on his head. So you know, it's one of those where I just I'm not too confident in this team right now, just because they seem to be getting in their own way a little too much.
Kevin, you want to make a prediction?
Yeah, I think they'll beat Montreal. I think they'll come back with a good effort. I honestly don't know what to make about the Canucks. I don't know what to get from one day to another. I don't know what you'll get from one shift to another. I don't know what you'll get from one period to another. But I think I'm going to say Vancouver beats Calgary this week, because this just seems as though the way things are rolling. I think Calgary beats St. Louis. I think the big, big question of that game, though, is do we get a goalie fight? It is Jordan Binnington. He does find a way to get himself involved in things.
I don't want a goalie fight. Like, I think Calgary's, I don't know. I don't want to see Markstrom fight, and I think Binnington will take down Vladar.
I hope. I don't want to see it either, but man, he's just off the rails.
I can see Binnington trying to fight.
You know, honestly, that's why you would, I would dress Lucic for that game and just tell him to go bug the goalie a bit. Not enough to take a penalty, but just bug him.
You know what's actually significant about that game? That will be Calgary's first game against St. Louis since that whole hellabaloo in the playoffs.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. I guess
that'll be
right.
Fun.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
That's why you keep me around.
That's right. Yeah. I knew there was a reason. Besides this, good
tell
luck.
Kadri to go bug him.
Kevin, we'll keep you around as long as you keep clearing waivers to come on our show.
All right. Well, hey, I'll keep clearing waivers.
All right. He says now until the Edmonton guys pick him up.
Yeah.
Then you just hear Kevin in the background. No,
that's when I will call them and say, I'll trade you for Kevin. Well, what do we get in return? I will consider you in the future. Yeah. Not favorably, just consider you.
Yeah. No, always great to be on. A lot of
fun. Won't tell you when, but at some point in the future, I'll consider you.
Yeah.
Maybe tomorrow, maybe a year from now.
But it will be in the future.
That's right. All right, we should get out of here before we start making other trades. And I start trading Matt to a Phoenix podcast or something.
Yeah.
Yay.
Matt, do you want to take us out?
As always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.